We're studying, according to chapter 37, 1, the generations of Jacob. But actually, we're studying the story of who? Joseph. Because the history or generations of Jacob were interwoven and dependent upon Joseph and the story of Joseph, and God's involvement in his life. When we read chapter 37, we see Joseph being sold into slavery by his own brothers. In chapter 39, the story picks up where he has now become a servant in Potiphar's house, a slave in the captain of the bodyguard's house. We see the Lord was with Joseph and everything he did prospered in his hand. And Potiphar, whether he recognized the God of the Hebrews or not as the cause of it, he saw that everything Joseph did prospered and gave him authority over everything in his house, all his belongings, his whole household. He was put in charge of it. However, we remember that Potiphar's wife began to try to seduce him to commit fornication or adultery with her. How old was Joseph when these attempts were being made by Potiphar's wife? We don't know, so he might have been 35.
No, he wasn't 30 because he was 30 when he was in Pharaoh's house.
What'd you say?
He was 17 when he was sold, and then this is a few years probably after that.
All right, he was 17 when he was sold. He's somewhere between the ages of 17 and 28. Because when he became ruler, he was 30. But he was in prison at least 2 years previous and maybe more. So 17 to 28, a young man seduced by this woman in a foreign land, having been sold by his brothers. But he would not involve himself with her attempts to seduce him. He gave a reason. What was it?
Sin against God.
Sin against God. Not, I'll lose my position. Not, I may be thrown in jail, or worse, put to death, but I can't do this and sin against God. This is what will drive people to the right kind of living. A fear of God, a respect for God. It'll take them, it'll sustain them and guide them wherever they may be. When they leave home and family, when they run into difficulties in life, this is what will sustain them. And this is what sustained Joseph, and we'll see some more of that in our study today. So, he fled. When she kept day after day, he fled. Sometimes that's the way to escape temptation, just to flee. The problem with that is you may lose things. You may lose your job. You may lose your position. You may have to move. Is it worth it? Joseph fled. Did he lose anything?
Lost his freedom.
Lost his freedom. That's right. And so he fled, and the woman slandered him. And so here now, besides all that else has happened to him, the woman slandered him and accused him of trying to seduce her. Turned it around. And so Potiphar, when the wife told him that, had Joseph thrown into jail, prison. The book of Psalms indicates that he might have been put in fetters and bonds. The verse in the book of Psalms, Psalm 105, that indicates that. And so here he is in prison. But there's a predominant phrase throughout chapter 39. If you have your Bibles open, show me what that phrase is. That's a key to this whole event. The Lord was with him. You see that in verse 2. You see that in verse 3. You see that in verse 21. You see that in verse 23. The Lord was with him. We're talking about the divine providence of God. Does it mean when Joseph woke up in the morning, there was the Lord sitting on the caught next to him? No. But the Lord was with him. His providential care, his concern for Joseph, even in these difficult circumstances. So in chapter 40, by the providence of God, what took place? That's right. The cupbearer and the chief baker had dreams, and Joseph interpreted their dreams. If you tell me your dream, and I tell you, here's what it means, what would you think?
Maybe so, maybe not. If it comes true, okay.
Maybe so, maybe not. You can be more definite than that. Definitely not. Because I wouldn't know what it means. But what is it about his interpretation that made it very clear he was right on target?
They both came true.
Came true when?
Short term.
Short term. And how many days?
Three days.
3 days. It's one thing to say it means this someday, sometime, and to say in 3 days. And what's interesting about the 3 days, the fate of the two men, what was unusual about the fate of the two men?
They were true.
One lived and one died.
They were opposite. So it wasn't just, I'll try to pick something that's favorable. One lived, one died. Use the same phrase of both men. You'll lift up your head. So that's what happened, and it happened in 3 days. So, what did he ask the man who lived to do for him? To remember him before Pharaoh when he was restored to his office. Did he?
No.
He forgot him. How would you feel? You're 17, you're 19, you're 22, whatever. Look at what your life has been from the time that you were 17. And here God enables you to interpret these dreams. Another 2 years gone. 2 more years passed. You could become despondent. You could become bitter. You could give up. But he didn't. And so we are at chapter 41. So on your lesson, you see that for chapter 41. We're going to see how he's exalted to second in authority over Egypt, because of the interpretation of some other dreams. But these are Pharaoh's dreams. Question. Would he have been asked to interpret Pharaoh's dreams if the events of chapter 39 had not taken place?
No.
Talk about divine providence. Things that may be happening in our lives we don't understand may be preparing us for service in areas we cannot envision. And so it's because he was in prison, because these two guys were in prison and he interpreted their dreams, and that was later related to Pharaoh, that these events took place. Yes, sir.
His attitude reminded me of another situation where three young men said, even if you throw us in that fire, we're still not going to serve your God, we're going to serve our God.
That's so true. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had that same attitude. Good observation, isn't it? So we start in chapter 41, verse 1. It happened at the end of 2 full years. And Pharaoh had a dream. Behold, he was standing by the Nile. Now, on your lessons, we ask you to briefly summarize what those dreams were. And so, for sake of time, we'll just summarize them here. And so you have some cows who are sleek and they're fat. But then after that, some other cows come up that he says are ugly and gaunt, and they eat up the fat cows. Now, note both cases of these dreams. It says, verse 3, there's a little statement. 7 other cows came up after them. So you have the fat cows, and then after them, these 7 other cows came up. Were very ugly and gaunt, and they ate up the fat cows. On the second dream, you have ears of grain that are very full, but then you have ears of grain, verse 6, that are thin and scorched by the wind. But note the last 2 words in verse 6. These ears came up after them. So note, we suggested on your marking, you mark time phrases. These are little time phrases, after them. And so we're going to see that to be significant when he interprets the dreams. And so Pharaoh, it's very interesting, several things here. It says that, verse 8, he called for some? All of the magicians or the sorcerers or the soothsayers or the priests or the ones that are supposed to have divine intervention from their gods. He called all of them. Note it again, and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was no one. I don't know how many there were. Not single one could interpret the dreams. And Ennis made mention of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right in connection with that story is the story of Daniel. When King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. And in that case, his magician not only had to tell him the interpretation, they had to tell him what he dreamed. They said, well, tell us what you dreamed. We'll tell you what it means. No, you tell me what I dreamed. He was smart enough to do that. So in any case, not one of them could tell him. Now, as you read through this story, as I reread it again, just go over for just a moment to chapter 41, verse 41. I want you to note something that at least stood out to me as I read this. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've set you over all the land of Egypt. One time's enough to say that, isn't it? All the land of Egypt. But observe. Verse 43. He had him ride in the second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, bow the knee. And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Then in verse 44. Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Verse 45 at the end of the verse, of course, Pharaoh named him Zaphnath-Paneah. That's interesting, by the way. Though Joseph's in a foreign land, among a foreign people, and we're not certain about the meaning of this name, but now he has not only these business ties to Pharaoh, he's now become this ruler, but none of this, and family ties to a wife that may have been her father, may have been an idolater, don't know that for sure. Neither business ties nor family ties led Joseph to adopt idolatry. And so sometimes young men and women are enveloped by their environment. Business ties, family ties, that did not keep Joseph from adhering to belief in the one true living God. But nevertheless, you note at the end of the verse, Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. And then in verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Here's one of our time phrases that helps us date all the events. We had 17 years old, 37, we have 30 now. You subtract 2 years because it was 2 years before Pharaoh's dream, and the one that was in prison told him about Joseph. So 2 full years had passed. We see that at the beginning of the chapter. So he was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. Note down in verse 48, as he made preparation for the famine, another statement that Moses adds. He gathered all the food of these 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and placed the food in the cities. He placed in every city the food from its surrounding fields. Then you get down to verse 56. The famine was spread over all the face of the earth. Then Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. The people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe in all the earth. If all the land of Egypt saw a Hebrew, a foreigner, who had been in prison, exalted to supreme ruler just under Pharaoh. Would that be noticeable?
Yes.
If you're an Egyptian? What? Not another Egyptian? Not one of Pharaoh's sons? This Hebrew? What's the next question?
Why?
And when they found that why, what does that expose all the Egyptians to?
God.
The God of the Hebrews. The God of Abraham. Does God love the Egyptians? Yes. Does He want to give them opportunity? Yes. Now, so Joseph is made ruler over all the land of Egypt. Everybody in Egypt under his dominion. That's not all. When he got the food, he placed the food where? In every city. How did we get all this food? We live over here in Potomac Valley. Oh, that guy Joseph. Every city. Hold your finger here and go to Exodus. Look at Exodus chapter 5 and verse 2. Not necessarily the same Pharaoh, but another Pharaoh. Pharaoh is just a ruler of Egypt. Like we say, president. So, Pharaoh said, who is the Lord? What's unique about the term Lord there?
All capitals.
All capitals. Jehovah, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Who is this being? Who is he that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord. And besides, I will not let Israel go. What happened between the Pharaoh of Joseph's day and the Pharaoh of this day? I don't know. Sometimes we don't learn from history. What relation was there between the two Pharaohs? I do not know. But certainly this Pharaoh had opportunity based in history. Not subjectivism, not I feel like it. In history, to know that there was a true living God based on what happened in his nation when Joseph was ruler. But when you get to chapter 7, look over to chapter 7. When God is preparing Moses for the execution of these plagues in Egypt, look at the purpose, verse 5. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord. He'd been giving them an opportunity. Apparently they let it slip by. But he's going to give them another opportunity to know who the one true God is. And so he brings judgment on all their gods through the plagues. But that's not all. Back in the text we're reading, this famine was where? All the earth. Where would they go to get grain? To Egypt. Why Egypt? That ruler who had stored up the grain, this guy named Joseph. Look in Exodus chapter 9, verse 16. We say, why the plague? Why 10 plagues? Why didn't God just take them out with one? Here's the reason. Verse 16. For this reason I've allowed you to remain, in order to show you my power and in order to proclaim my name throughout all the earth. Proclaim his name. Does that mean he had people going out shouting, Lord, Lord, Lord? Proclaim his name means
who he is.
Who he is. Remember, that's a Hebrewism. Let people know who he is. And so, in all the earth, did it work?
Yes.
Rahab knew about it, didn't she? They feared them. And so, she's a harlot over in the land of Canaan. But she heard about it and had faith based on historical events. And so when I read chapter 41 and I see all of these things happening, there's a greater story than just there was a famine and Joseph made preparation. Behind all of this is God's love and care for all mankind. Certainly, the Hebrews would be brought in contact again with Joseph as we continue the story. But Egypt would have the opportunity to know about Joseph, and all the earth would have opportunity to know about the God that Joseph served. So it's just an interesting thing, and lifts this to a level as we see. We started way back in chapter 3 with a promise God made that in the woman's seed all families of the earth would be blessed, or he should conquer Satan's head. And then in chapter 12, that's enlarged upon with Abraham, and Abraham's seed, all nations of the earth would be blessed. And we see God carrying this out throughout all these events. And so, what would have happened if there wasn't a Joseph? What would have happened if his brother had killed him? What would have happened if he hadn't interpreted the dream? What would have happened if he had lost his faith? And you can just go on and on and on. So here we are in chapter 41. And, sir?
God would have worked out another way to do it.
Okay. God could work out another way, but he used this particular way. And so, verse 9, the cupbearer told Pharaoh about what had happened. How he was in prison. And there, verse 12, a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard. And we related to them, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And then you have this statement in verse 13. Just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. And then the two results we just talked about. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. So Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph. So Pharaoh calling for Joseph is based on the events that took place in prison. The interpreting of those dreams. Hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. When he shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. And so Pharaoh said in verse 15, I've had a dream. No one can interpret it. I've heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. So what would have this been a prime opportunity for Joseph to have done? That's not a good question, but I'll ask it anyway.
Sure, I can do that.
Yeah, I could do that. But you got the right guy, man. But what does he do instead? He turns the glory to God. He said, it is not in me. Nothing about me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. And we've talked about God using these events to bring Egypt the opportunity to know him. Now, you have some statements all through this chapter. Here you have verse 16. He said, God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Look it down to verse 25. Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told Pharaoh. These are not ordinary dreams. God has told Pharaoh. Then you get down to verse 28. It is as I've spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh. He just keeps driving that home. The God I worship, the God I serve, has shown to Pharaoh. And then in verse 32, he said, the matter is determined by God, and God will bring it about. And then in verse 39, Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you. Did Pharaoh get it? He apparently got it, didn't he? Since God has informed you. And so, that's what Joseph was aiming at. That he would know. But these are some, the two dreams in prison were remarkable indeed. Involved two men with tremendous consequences, whether one man would stay in prison the rest of his life or be restored to office, make a difference in his entire life. The other man, life or death. But they were personal. What's the difference about this dream? These two dreams?
It's national.
They're national. They affect the entire nation of Egypt and, in fact, all the earth. It's one thing to talk about, to make some guesses, if you please, about a person and their life. It's a different thing to say something's going to happen to an entire nation. And something else he did, just like he did in prison. What did he do where you could put his interpretation to the test? Time stamped. Not just one, but two. Right? When you look at his interpretation of the dream, down in verse 47, during the 7 years of plenty. Not there's going to be a plentiful time for a few years. No, 7 years. Specific. And then when you get down to verse 50, before the famine came. So you got the 7 years of plenty that he's going to gather the crops. And when he interpreted the dream, he made reference to these very things. Down in verse 26, go back up to verse 26. The seven good cows are 7 years. The seven good ears are 7 years. Verse 27, the seven lean and ugly cows, 7 years. The seven thin ears, 7 years. So not only did he define the years of plenty, he defined the years of famine. And said one will follow the other. There's so many particulars about this dream. And so, the dreams in prison, you'd know whether they're true in 3 years, 3 days. You'd begin to know whether these were true when? Huh? When you get into that beginning of that 7 years, what's going to happen to the crops? Huh?
You mean the 7 years of plenty?
Yes. What would happen to the crops in the 7 years of plenty?
They're very abundant.
Very abundant. Man, there's going to be harvest like you can't imagine. In fact, when he laid up during those 7 years of plenty, you can see that verse 49, Joseph stored up again in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he stopped measuring it, for it's beyond measure. These weren't ordinary harvest years. This was abundant. And you know, 6 months in, a year into the 7 years of plenty, you begin to, Next year. How long is this going to last? Lasted 7 years. Is this enough to give you reason to think about who's God? This frog I worship, or the sea, or whatever, or the God that this man worships? And then after the 7 years, well, we'll see if this guy's telling the truth. 8th year, what happens?
Famine.
1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 7 years. And so, God gave them abundant evidence. And so God, you know, people say, why don't God make himself known? What else does he need to do? The creation, the design of the universe. Psalmist says the heavens are declaring the glory of God. Paul told the idolaters in Lystra, he gives you rain from heaven, fills your heart with food and gladness. What else does he need to do? We have this incident that's taking place, not in Israel, in a foreign nation. And it's a national incident. Would their history not say that's a bunch of fables if it didn't happen? And so God has made himself known throughout history. The problem is we're not familiar many times with biblical history. you know, our children, we've got classes going on back here. And some of these teachers will be teaching some of these events. But if you want your children to believe in God, not because they love you, not because they've been brought to this building, but because of objective foundation, teach them biblical history. You as a parent, that's your job. Here's why we can believe in God. It's objective evidence. It's outside feelings and parents and family and friends. And so that's what we have. All right. So, we get to chapter 41. So he tells about the dream. So let's move on to chapter 42. So Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. Remember, the famine was over all the earth. So they're over in Canaan, removed from Egypt for many, many miles. And Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" He said, "Behold, I've heard there's grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us from that place." Why?
Because it was food.
What is the reason given? Live and not die. What if it had died? What if those boys had died? Were they a great nation yet?
No.
And yet God made a promise to Abraham's grandfather? That through him there'd be a great nation. But it's just Jacob and his boys. And he said, "We're going to die. No great nation here." Well, how's God going to save them? Story of Joseph. And when you get over further in the stories, which we'll see in some further lessons, Joseph will make reference to that very idea. So, 10 brothers went down. Where's the other two?
Joseph's
one, ruler. Where's the other one? Benjamin. He stays home. Jacob says, "You stay here." And so, verse 6, Joseph was the ruler of the land. He's one who sold all the people of the land. Joseph's brothers came and bowed to him. How old was Joseph?
37.
How?
He was 30 when Pharaoh made him ruler, and then 7 years had passed.
So how old is he?
That would make him 37.
So how many years ago had he told his brothers about the dream? At least 20 years ago, maybe a little more, because we said that may have predated the events that's recorded in chapter 17. What do you think the brothers thought in that 20 years? I knew he was a dreamer. Year passes, 5 years passes. All this dream he told us about is bowing down to him. What foolishness. Must have ate a bad supper that day. 10 years passed, 15 years passed. The God we serve is not defined by time. When God makes a promise, he's going to keep it. But the fact that God doesn't operate on our calendar causes some people to lose faith. You remember in the New Testament where that's referred to? 2 Peter chapter 3. What do the mockers say? Where's the promise of his coming? Since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were since the beginning of the world, which is not true, but that's what they say. What are you talking about, the promise of Jesus coming again and going to judge the ungodly? Every day I get up, sun rises, night, sun goes down, everything stays the same. And he said, 1,000 years to God is as one day. One day is 1,000 years. God is a timeless being. And so, Joseph, verse 7, saw his brothers. He recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly, said, "Where are you from?" They said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. And that's interesting, too. It had been 20 years, but they don't recognize him. Of course, he was just a youth back then. He's maybe now has a beard. When he came out of prison, it says he shaved himself, remember? But be that as it may, I didn't recognize him. Joseph, verse 9, remembered the dream. Joseph remembered. They're going to remember. Joseph remembered. And so he says, "You're spies." Now what's interesting, of course, they denied it. And verse 11. Look at verse 11. What did they say about themselves? What are you talking about, man? We're honest. Really? Really? Look, he says, "Your servants are not spies." He said, "Yeah, you've come to look at undefended parts of our land." Look what they said in verse 13. "Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man of the land of Canaan. Behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive." How do they know that?
They assumed.
I don't even know if they assumed it. They might have. If they're honest men, why don't they just fess up?
They're not that honest.
Honest. We're honest. Yeah, boy. When I was a boy, living in Port Arthur, Texas, there was a car dealer. And the sign over his business was "Honest Abe," I think. My dad says, "Yeah, right." Be careful. Because the guy wears his collar backwards and they call him reverend, doesn't mean he's honest. Because the guy stands in his pulpit, doesn't mean he's honest. Because the guy says he's honest, doesn't mean he's honest. We're honest men. And so he told him, "You stay here, you guys stay here, go get your brother." But he put him in prison, verse 17, for 3 days. Boy, that must have been 3 days of contemplation. On the third day, he said, "Do this." Now, what is keeping... Could Joseph have put all these boys to death?
Yes.
Yes. But what's the motivation he gives in verse 18? "I fear God after all that's happened to him." 20 years have passed. Look what he's been through. "I fear God." He feared God in the prison. He fears God now. What a remarkable young man. And sometimes people may think, well, young men have careers. And they rise in their company. And they get positions of power and influence. And it's been shown that oftentimes with that and the wealth that comes with it, God becomes distant in people's lives. Not with this young man. Second position of power in the nation. No longer hungry, poor. He said, "I fear God." And so, yes.
We give Joseph a lot of credit for what he's done, but all he's accomplished is because of God.
It is.
He has reason to fear God because he's seen God fulfill these dreams. Joseph had those dreams when he was a kid. Now here he is. It's been fulfilled, and here are his brothers before him. He was in prison, had those dreams before him. He interpreted those dreams. And now the famine's happening too. So at the start, when he was talking to Pharaoh, he said, "It's not me, it's God." So he's always known it's God. And that's his reason, because he knows God has the power.
Good point. Never took the credit for himself. You know, I talked about the boys saying it's been 5, 10, 15 years. What about Joseph? You know, maybe 5 years later, 10 years later, maybe he may have still been in prison 5 years later. We don't know how long he was in prison. Would he come to doubt God? There's no indication he ever did. And now he remembers the dreams. And as Josh has pointed out, he always attributes it to God. Note verse 19, what Joseph puts the challenge out. If you are honest men. If you are honest men. so he makes the challenge to them. And so they get to talking among themselves, and I put on your lesson that sometimes the things we do come home to roost, and that's exactly what you see here. They get to thinking about this, and they say, "We are guilty, verse 21, concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us," when they threw him in the pit. What does this indicate? He's pleading with them. What'd they do? Sat down and ate. We just ignored him. Yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy? You would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood. Come back to bite us. All right. I let the time get away, but we'll pick up with some of this in our next class. Try to get this in the next chapters in the lesson, but we're out of time. So just a tremendously, not only interesting to me, it's what to me one of the most touching stories in the Bible. So if you'll come back Wednesday night, we'll pick up this time in chapter 42 and go on through the other couple of chapters.